This week on Retronauts, I know perfectly well what I'm fighting for. Thank you very much. Friends, and welcome to a very futuristic episode of Retronauts. I'm your host, Nadia Oxford of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast. Joining me are two fellow Mega Man sickos, Brian of the Rockman Corner and Stuart of this very podcast, or so I'm told. I want you both to say hi. In fact, I demand it. You start first, Brian, since you're our very special guest.
Hey, folks. Happy to be here.
Oh, hello. Yes, I didn't take that as a cue. I'm Stuart Jip. Nice to be here also.
And Brian, you actually run, well, I know you best as Proto Dude because you run the Rockman Corner, which is a Mega Man blog. How would you describe it? Like, you know, a Mega Man news blog, Mega Man everything blog?
Gosh, whenever I want to call it a news blog, there's always something that's not news I get to talk about on there. I would say it's like an all things Mega Man blog. Been doing it for the past 14 years, mostly a one man operation. But I guess, like, as you get older, you get more people coming in to help you out.
But yeah. As you get older, you kind of need that help to kind of help your creaky old bones. But Jesus Christ, 14 years. Like, I feel like I've known you for a long time. And of course I have. But even so, it's like, to me, you come from the middle of my Mega Man career. Like, I started so long ago that I just, I don't want to call you a young child because you certainly aren't. But yeah, I'm an ancient. You're an ancient. We're all ancients. What about you, Stuart? Are you an ancient?
I guess so. I'm not really sure. I mean, I played Mega Man 1 on the NES back when it was like relatively new. Does that count? I don't know. I didn't get to play any more Mega Man until I had, I think, a PC capable of emulating it. So that was a while after that.
You didn't play that awesome Mega Man 3 DOS game or Mega Man DOS game?
No, we didn't. I mean, over here in the UK, I don't think he was as big a deal as he was in the US. And I didn't have an NES. I didn't have a Super NES. So what was I going to do? Play the X games? I guess, yeah.
But I didn't. Yeah.
They were like rarer than hen's teeth. So I didn't get any of them. Even when I started collecting PS1 stuff, I couldn't find them. So I didn't get to play anything until I was emulating it. And then I just ate it all up and devoured the whole series basically from there on.
Yeah, that's really interesting thinking about it because, as you said, overseas, the Nintendo NES wasn't such a humongous deal as it was in North America. Did you just decide to try Mega Man on a whim and say, hey, this is really cool?
A friend of mine had 2 on his NES, which I really rarely got to play because it's basically as soon as I got into it, they bought a PS1 quite shortly afterwards. So jeez, it was quite a leap, I know. But then when I did get into it, it was just a case of, I remember liking Mega Man's. So let's look into this, finding out. It sort of came to me at the perfect possible time because I was getting really into like drawing and such, and there's a lot of inspiration in there. But I remember being at school and everyone else was into, I don't know, brand new games, and I was printing out like sprite sheets and pictures of all of the different Mega Man 7 bosses and thinking about how cool they looked. And then, of course, in the present, everyone says those sprites look really goofy, so I don't know.
They're still near and dear to me. They're good for tattoos. Yeah. Or at least the first one is. Like, I mean, Brian, I think you and I, our Mega Man histories are probably similar in that we both had the Nintendo, maybe, or the Super Nintendo, and just played Mega Man and said, hey, this is really cool. Like, me personally, I didn't start with 1, so you have 1 up on me, Stuart. I started with 3. I happened to buy it, like, on a whim because it was, like, for sale at some independent video store, and it was, like, $20. I said, oh, okay, I remember, you know, getting Game Pro and Video Power over on US stations when I could, and I'd watch it. And I remember hearing a lot of Mega Man. I said, oh, wow, this sounds cool. I played it. Hey, this is cool. I played 4 next. I played 2 after that. I think I went to 5, then I went to 1. So I've really been all over the map. How about you, Brian?
Oh, wow. You know, my first exposure was on a field trip to the library in preschool.
Amazing.
And I saw, I think it was a Nintendo Power with a X2 as the cover story.
Sweet.
And I, at that age, like, my parents would not let me have video games at all. You know? I was one of those kids. But my cousin had a Super Nintendo. So he had X1. And yeah, the first game I played was Mega Man X1. But the first one I owned was X4. My grandparents went on my parents' orders, and they got me a PlayStation.
Oh, good for your grandparents. And you have the last laugh, because now you're like, well, take that, mom and dad. My life is Mega Man now.
Pretty much.
I showed you. I actually, in my mind, I can envision the Nintendo Power cover for X2 was actually really badass. So I'm not surprised they picked it up. Like, it had that kind of blood red, like, display of Wheel Gator stage, I think it was, and X is dashing towards the camera. It's that's pretty badass. Actually gathered here today to talk about one of several Mega Man series spin-offs, and that is the Mega Man Zero series, which is a continuation of Mega Man X, and we'll get into that. We will talk probably mostly about the first game, but I do want to touch on everything, because this is going to come out wrong. There's a lot to touch when it comes to Mega Man Zero. The story in particular is quite fascinating. I think it's definitely the best in the Mega Man series, barring maybe Legends. But Mega Man Zero, released in 2002, it was a really quintessential 2D platformer for its time. And like most 2D platformers from its time, it was parked on the Game Boy Advance. Fortunately, it kind of thrived there. In fact, Mega Man in general thrived on the Game Boy Advance, thanks to that and the Mega Man Battle Network series. And Mega Man Zero still has a pretty hefty fan base who, made up of people who enjoy things like getting flogged with whips braided with bits of metal and bone, because damn, it is an infamously hard game, infamously hard series, although the first game is certainly known as the hardest. Now, Brian and Stuart, we just talked a bit about how we got into Mega Man and X. What about Zero? Was that just kind of a natural progression? Like, holy crap, here comes another continuation of the X series. I got to get my hands on this. Or was it even maybe the siren's call of really hard gameplay that got you into it?
It was that natural continuation. And it was kind of an enigma. The English release wasn't like announced yet, and all we had access to was like the Japanese ROM. And watching the fan base kind of try to figure out what's going on, where's X, what's happening. But yeah, even without English, it was really hard.
Stuart, how about you?
I was aware it existed because I was on the old Mega Man BB.
We must have run into each other. Definitely punched each other.
Definitely. I can't remember what my username was or anything like that, but I was definitely on there. And as Brian said, the GBA, unfortunately, well, fortunately, depending on who you are, had Visual Boy Advance come out like almost immediately. So I was playing this on the Japanese ROM as well. Of course, I did delete it after 24 hours, if the police are listening.
Oh, of course. The police will come to your door otherwise.
But playing this game, seeing... and well, I was... God, how old was I? 87 in 2097. But young enough that this meant the world to me, because sliding up, slashing a robot in half and seeing, oh yes, a load of blood fly out of it.
That was pretty cool.
Coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It's like your fan fiction's becoming real. Like, suddenly there's blood in Mega Man and violence and extreme misery and despair. And this was when Mega Man fans were kind of eaten good, because, as you say, there was Battle Network running. But I think there was still the X series running as well, kind of, like X7 and X8. And I believe maybe X6 was around this time.
X6 came out around 2001, I think. I was just married to my husband.
Oh, so we weren't necessarily eating good when it comes to the Mega Man series.
We had substance, but not exactly quality. Yeah.
But no, I mean, I played this as I did all of them. It was like I played the Japanese ROM, then when the English ROM came out, I played that. And then when I actually got a Game Boy Advance, which was way later, I did buy up all the cartridges, though I think some of them may have been dodgy because I got them off eBay. And I don't know anymore. But no, this is some of my favorite stuff ever. This might be my favorite sort of series ever. I mean, with comparing the story to Legends, I mean, the only thing I can say in its favor is that this actually ends. And Legends probably never will. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, sigh. Yeah, I don't think Mega Man's ever getting off that moon. And gosh, we could do a whole podcast about that. Yeah. It's probably already been done, but yeah, I think another one needs to be done.
it's got like an actual start and finish. You know, it's very satisfying, very cathartic.
It does. Not, you know, thinking about it, so does Battle Network. Battle Network had a distinct end. And it's, so, I mean, Capcom could finish things when they wanted to. Just sometimes they really didn't want to. Case in point, as you said, Legends, case in point, Mega Man X. To this day, every E3 season, I sit and I wait and I just think to myself, this will be the year that they reveal Mega Man X9, and it's never going to happen.
Oh God. After the X Legacy Collection, when they did the sort of one final secret thing, and the Legacy Collection 2 had that hint for Mega Man 11 in it.
Yes.
That you could have been forgiven for thinking that was going to be the year, but unfortunately, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. I just like, I think it was Mega Man X8 was revealed at E3 2004, I think it was. And since then, I've just been like waiting, like, you know, kind of like Bart in Camp Krusty holding the doll saying, Krusty is coming, except for me. It's like, Mega Man X is coming. It's never coming, but I don't care. I'm still gonna hope, just out of habit.
One day.
Stuart, you were mentioning the blood and like the splatter of blood. They took that out of the US version.
They did. It's still not in, I want to say it's still not in the Legacy Collections, but you can obviously play the Japanese versions in those. But obviously fans have edited the English script into the Japanese game. Yeah. So you can download that ROM, but you definitely shouldn't unless you delete it after 24 hours.
No, you don't want Capcom to go out of business. You would be personally responsible. That would be bad. Don't do it. I don't think I played the Japanese ROM, believe it or not, but I did download the English ROM like in 2000, early 2000. I had zero money, so I just downloaded a lot of Game Boy Advance games and did my best that way. But yeah, so I downloaded Mega Man 01. I did eventually get it. And I kind of got into it because, like you two, it was a natural progression. I was still really deep into Mega Man X. I was part of the Mega Man BB. My nickname was Red Draco. I don't know if you remember me from that name at all, but
it does actually ring a bell, weirdly enough. But yeah,
I did post there a lot and got into fights with some people. Like, it was a really interesting, it was a really interesting environment. Like, if you ever have a chance, go to usgamer.net. And I still have a lot of like, I wrote about me moderating old communities from way back in the day, and that was always a gas. Like, imagine social media, except it's smaller, much, much smaller. So it's not too terrible, just slightly terrible. And now you understand why social media is terrible. So just for a brief intro about what Mega Man Zero is specifically, like where it fits, as I said, it's done in 2002. It was commissioned by Capcom from Intercreates, which I don't think Intercreates had much of a name going for itself until it kind of got a hold of the Mega Man Zero series and was allowed to almost like, it was given almost free reign by Capcom with a few exceptions. Number one, of course, Inafune wanted Zero to be in there because Zero has to exist everywhere in the Inafuniverse. And and also, I can't remember if it was Capcom or the team Intercreates that wanted to kind of make the divide between good and evil a little bit more blurred than it was in the X games and in the original series. So that's why you have, just from the very start, you have a very interesting premise where Zero awakens in a future that's just completely trash, because that tends to happen in Mega Man games. And he finds out that his former partner, Mega Man X, is the bad guy, quote unquote, bad guy. And of course, you're like, if you know anything, the slightest thing about the Mega Man series, you say to yourself, wow, what's that all about? And so you just kind of set out and see what happens. How did you guys feel when you were like, holy crap, X?
I thought it was neat. I thought it was a cool twist until we learned it was a copy.
Like, yeah.
Okay, well, still neat, but gosh, I mean, I think that was the original premise too, that they were going to...
It
was going to be X. And I think it was like a couple months before they shipped the game, they decided to change it up a bit and they made him a copy. They didn't want to make X a villain. Marketing purposes, whatever. but no, I really loved the idea behind it, the duality.
Yes.
Of Zero fighting his best friend, a copy of his best friend.
It's so anime, but the best kind of anime. Like, were you surprised, Stuart, or had you spoiled yourself?
It was surprising, but being relatively cynical, and I was just like, well, I mean, obviously this won't really be it because there'll be some excuse for why it's not. I mean, having said that, I don't want to jump ahead, but there are things that happen in this series that are quite shocking, irrespective of that. It also kind of makes sense in a way that X might become like that if you sort of follow his arc, because I mean, in the X games around that time, he's trying to be sort of full pacifist, but these terrible things keep happening. Yeah. So life keeps getting worse and worse. And there are all manner of reasons why he could turn bad, for any manner of reasons in the universe, why that could happen. So it wasn't unfeasible, but I guess I was just too cynical for that. But it was still cool. I still liked it.
Yeah, they were originally going to make him the bad guy, as we just went over. And I can't remember the reason why, Brian, you're probably onto something with the marketing, but also I think they thought it was too cynical to make him the bad guy, even though, as you said, Stuart, it really does make sense. His many attempts at pacifism fail, and they fail spectacularly by the time we get to the Elf Wars, which we will kind of touch on in a bit. And I kind of like I'm very split on the idea. Like, on one hand, yeah, it's raw, it's powerful in its own way, but it's also kind of sad. Like, X is a very beat on upon character, and that just seems like it unravels everything he was, everything he was meant to be, everything Dr. Light intended for him. And it's cool, but in the long term, maybe it wouldn't have been the best idea. So I don't really hold any grudge against Integrate / Capcom for saying, okay, you know what? He was a copy this whole time. We're joking.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, when they line up the protagonists of Mega Man games, they always say like, oh, X is boring. He's very
vanilla. He's the Superman, they say.
Exactly. So had they gone the route of, if he was not a copy and this was legit X, and he went to that more villainous route, I feel like people's perception of X as a character would have been a lot different. It could have led to some more interesting character development. I don't know. But it's a shame, honestly. I wish we could have seen that.
Yeah. He was involved heavily, like, with, say, at the end of X5, he tells one of his underlings he's going to create Elysium, or I can't remember if he used the word Elysium or Eden or something, but it was implied that at the time when he said that, we thought, okay, he's going to be, this is the lead in to the Legends series, because the Mega Man Legends 2 has Elysium, and also Mega Man Legends 1 has Eden. But no, it actually turns out he was talking about the formation of Neo Arcadia, which is the city that Zero kind of fights through or outside of into. And it's supposed to be a paradise for humans. It really, really sucks for Reploids. And when actually you start the game, Shell, the scientist, wakes up Zero and says, your friend X is going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and he's killing all the Reploids, and Reploids live in Neo Arcadia like a miserable life, all the humans kind of like lord over them. And things do suck for humans in Neo Arcadia eventually by the fourth game. Maybe we'll get into that if we have time. But thinking about Mega Man Zero, I think one of the things that made it unique as well is that I don't recall ever selecting the 8 bosses, do you? Like the infamous Mega Man menu stage. You get that in the subsequent games, but not the first one.
It doesn't have the traditional menu, but you can sort, there are some missions that you can choose the order of, I think. So there is that, but it's not really the same thing. It's interestingly sort of similar to, I'm actually getting confused. No, it is to that thing. Sorry, I was going to say it's like Mega Man X1, but then I remembered, no, that's just the wild, Sigma stages. So I apologize.
Yeah.
It's just a menu, basically. It's not the same as it used to be.
It wasn't too distinct of, you didn't know what boss would be at the end of that route, which is like you said, like a list of missions. It was kind of like a crapshoot in your first playthrough.
In so many ways, that game on the first playthrough is brutal crapshoot. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, and it's, if you screw up, and you will, it's not very forgiving. But you did have your standard robot bosses. And the thing that's very interesting about the Mega Man Zero robot master, can't really call them Mavericks. I mean, to us, they're Mavericks, but to the humans, they're heroes. They're all kind of based loosely on like religious figures. You have Anubis, the god of judgment in Egyptian myth. You have Hanuman, of course, the monkey god from Hinduism. I'm trying to remember who else there was. There was also the elephant. Ganesh Sharif,
yeah.
These are great names, aren't they? Like,
They're so cool. They went back to
the Japanese naming.
Seriously, when I was like in my sort of early teens, mid-teens, this was the coolest thing ever. This game on every level was just unimaginably cool. The whole idea of having like bosses designed after like mythological figures is just awesome. All the names are awesome. All the blood of heroes are awesome. All their attack patterns that are so extreme are just so cool. This game just ruled. It was so good. Now, with hindsight, I have some problems with it, but I loved it, and I still do love it because it was so important to me. But yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I just got excited about Mega Man Zero.
No, the whole point of this podcast is to get as excited about Mega Man Zero as possible. Yeah. You don't understand.
This whole series is just like the peak of action gaming for me, personally. I don't think it's actually the peak of action gaming, but for me it is. Like, everything is just chasing this. Everything that came after it, like, all the things that look like they're going to be at like Gunvolt, they're just not as good. Yeah, so good, so good.
I was actually going to just kind of to segue into that. Just did you guys find it too hard? Because infamously, the game, one of the reasons it's considered so hard is because you have your rank that you're rated with at the end of every stage. And if you use cyber elves, which are kind of like helpers, like your sub tanks and whatnot, even like your ranking goes down. And I can't remember if there's any benefit for getting like the S rank in every stage, but I sure as God never did.
I'm not sure if there is in this game. There is. I think the only unlockable thing is the Jackson elf you can get by using all the other cyber elves.
Right.
I know that if you have a high rank, that bosses have at least one additional attack, I think.
Oh, right, right.
Which I think is a kind of a bit of a flaw, because it's adding like risk without the reward, so to speak. But then I guess the reward is you get to say, look, I've got a big A or a big S under my... health bar. I mean, this game is very formative. I think the rank thing is rubbing up against some of the other systems, like the whole leveling up system, which is just a complete misfire for me. Mm-hmm. Like the later games just give you all your moves. Like 3 and 4, just like, yeah, we know that was stupid. Forget it. It never happened. Brush it under the carpet, so to speak. But in this game, it just means that, like, I know you're not supposed to do this, but every time I play this game through, once I've done the first mission, I go back to the state of the first mission. I just swipe those constantly respawning spike tower things until I get full max level.
I think I do that too.
Which is it's a really cheap way of doing it, but it's also way more fun to play with those moves than it is without. And it still nails hard, even when you have all your moves. So it doesn't feel like cheating.
That's not cheating. No, never.
No, cheating's using the Game Shark, like I did.
Well, I mean, you say that, but I mean, I was using save states. I'm not going to pretend that.
Using save states. I think we're all save scumming.
It wasn't until I got them on cartridge that I had to actually, you know, get good. And even then, like, the best I could do is an A rank, the S rank. Like, no. I mean, maybe back in the day, yes, but not anymore. Not when I tried to get back to it. I'm not getting S ranks anymore. Those days are gone.
No, my reflexes are mush. There's no way. You're talking about like, you know, your A and your S beside your save state. I'm like, look at me. I have a D and I'm so proud of it. But I was kind of playing more for the story. And Stuart, your talk about like, you know, the extra attacks brought to mind the generals, Fafnir. It was always mass translated. So I say Fafnir, Harpua, Leviathan, and Phantom. He was the freaking coolest, but I was thinking about the Fafnir in particular had a extra move called, what was it? Like, basically, it was all based on the Sodom and Gomorrah thing. Like, he had the cannon, his name Sodom and Gomorrah. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool and edgy. So I understand where you're coming from. But that attack hit hard, pretty hard.
Some of them, I don't think it's so much in 0-1, but some of the A/S attacks actually make the fights easier, which I think is quite funny. So I guess that's a reward. I mean, I know a particular example is there's one that's, there's a boss called Death Dance Mantis or something in the third game. Yeah. And his attack is he drops a boulder and then slashes it into three pieces, and the three pieces kind of go at a short angle towards you. Uh-huh. And if you're on the wall, it can't hit you. And it's just like two free hits. And I'm just like, thanks, game, for rewarding me. I mean, I think this game, this first one, has a bit of an issue with its difficulty, which is that it punishes you for mitigating it rather than mitigating it too much. The later ones kind of figure that out and they let you use the elves to an extent without ranking penalties. But right. This game is just like, you use an elf. You're done. Like, forget it. Your rank's toilet.
You're a child.
Like, you're done. Yeah. And this game, like, I mean, this, I don't think this even has sub-tanks without punishment. The later games have
separate you're right.
sub-tanks. And this one, it's just like, no, you've got that one small health bar. And if you do anything about it, then we're taking the ranks away from you.
I totally
so I guess, yeah. I guess the solution is to not care about ranking. But it's really hard when after every mission, it's like, F, you suck. You're terrible. Go to hell.
You're not saving the world at all. You're being awful. Yeah. In fact, one of the things that really was a huge criticism, and it still lingers to this day, is that if you failed at a stage, you could not retry it, as I recall.
I'm not sure. You could get game over. I think you could choose to give up, and that would erase it. But I think you could just say, no, I'm not giving up, or something like that. I don't think it was quite as extreme as that, but I might be mistaken because I have never failed at the stage because I'm just too skilled.
Of course you have. Do you recall, Ryan? Because I don't.
I think you had a limited number of retries that you could retry. Right. If you ran out, you were forced to go back to the title screen and restart your save over. Like, you couldn't restart or the mission. You had to go to the title screen.
Yeah, that was something else. Yeah. And if I recall correctly, like, you're... Like, before each stage, you were kind of given an incentive to do it. Like, oh, hey, this Reploid's about to be crushed by a garbage compactor. You better get him before he's completely mashed to a pancake. And you fail. And then Shell's like, oh, yeah, he's dead. Sorry. Next stage. Give it a try. There was actually an escort mission, because of course there was. And
oh, boy.
I remember laughing my ass off because... escorting like this hurt Reploid back to base throughout the desert, which is just crawling with every enemy you can imagine, especially these eagles, which keep dive bombing him. And every time he gets dive bombed, he kind of cowers and like tries to protect himself. And I'm just sitting on the sidelines laughing my ass off as he's getting pecked away by like robot vultures. It was great.
I remember the sound he makes distinctly.
Yeah, same.
So many times I had to retry.
I'm going to see if I can recreate the sound. That level, oh man, that level sucks. I really hate that level. I mean, it's one thing that it's an escort mission, it's another thing that the screen is so zoomed in that you cannot possibly see those eagles coming.
No, you can't see a thing.
I swear they designed it for some kind of development kit that had a much larger screen to state. They must have known that it was impossible. The later games got better for that. It was still hard, but they didn't have these things dive bombing you in every level, which you couldn't possibly see coming. Like, even level two or level, like, the first main level, you've got these rolling spike ball things, and they're so fast that they're on you as soon as they've appeared. And it's like, they take, I think, like, a full combo to kill. So I'm like, what do you expect me to do to them? You got to jump the instant they're on the screen or you're going to take a hit. It's, man, that game does not let you off easy, even at the start. I think it's the trash compactor level is the first real level, and it's got Aztec Falcon is the boss, and Aztec Falcon is really difficult.
Yeah, yes, right. He's a dick.
And you've got nothing. You're not going to be leveled up to have a charge attack by that point unless you really are just standing there and losing rank. So God knows. Oh, man. Memories.
It always makes me think, like, you know, who are they trying to market the 0, 0, 1, 2?
Mm-hmm.
In the US, the marketing was very much, you know, like, it's mega time, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, God, that commercial. He's called the Blue Bomber because he's blue.
Yeah. And speaking as a kid at the time, like, this was frustrating as hell. Like, nowhere near as easy as, like, I don't know, X4, X5 was. But, like, you know, what were they expecting? Just, you know, kids can't play this. It's just so hard.
Yeah, as I said, I saved Scum, although I was glad I did, because personally, going into Neo Arcadia, the first stage, that's one of my favorite Mega Man stages ever, especially one of my favorite Mega Man boss stages, because it's pretty much like we get very few glimpses into Neo Arcadia within that game or any other game. And you kind of come from the wasteland, which is, of course, blasted away by the Elf Wars, which again, we'll get into in a minute. And you get into, you come into like this garden that apparently belongs to X, and you're like, wow, this asshole has like a whole ass garden. And like, you really get the impression that everyone outside Neo Arcadia really is suffering. So I just like that kind of visual storytelling in a game. And as I recall, there was that stag beetle or something boss that kicked my ass.
That guy's cool.
It was pretty cool. The whole stage is very cool.
I'm going to keep saying that about everything in the game. That was cool because it was. I sound like Butthead or something.
That was cool.
It just was such a cool game. And Neo Arcadia, the bosses of those stages were just so awesome and interesting and different and strange.
Yeah.
Like the Rainbow Devil was just the best imaginable take on the devil concept from the Mega Man series. The standing sort of golem thing made out of constantly color-changing slime. Just right. Such a great idea as a take on the Yellow Devil, the Black Devil, all those bosses. Really, really interesting.
He knocked it out of the park with these designs. They're just incredible.
Is that the artist? I couldn't remember their name and I felt guilty because I have the artbook and everything. I really love the art from this series.
So the artist is Taru Nakayama, and he has a very distinct style that kind of carries on into the Gunvolt series today. But I think most people still remember him best for Mega Man Zero because it's just, well, for one thing, Zero's design changes completely, which is a very controversial move.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure how I feel about it, especially when it's revealed in Mega Man Zero 3 that Zero is actually in a new body, but his old body still looks like Mega Man Zero.
That was such a weird twist because of that. They could have made that look like maybe even the PlayStation 1 Zero, and that would have made more sense. But no, they chose not to. They fully doubled down, and I kind of respect them for that.
Continuity, what?
Continuity, indeed, yeah. I know we're kind of skipping ahead here to Mega Man Zero 3, but goddamn, that's a cool fight when you're up against Evil Zero and his quote in Japanese is, "I am the Messiah." It's like, goddamn, again, that's so anime, but the good type of anime. I wish that was the kind of thing we had in Mega Man X when Zero went Maverick and like just lost his mind. It could have been so much cooler, and it was kind of cool in Zero 3, so I'm glad they made it up a bit. Talked a bit about the difficulty. Again, I saved Scum through most of it. Zero 2, as I recall, really kind of gave us some mercy. It also went back to a more traditional setup where you had your Maverick menu and you chose from it. It also was Zero 2 was kind of an allegory for the Iraq War. And by God, I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards. That had to do with, first of all, you had the character Elpigio, who was Zero has been in the context of things. Zero is gone for a while after the events of Mega Man 01. He's kind of revived after a very hard fight by X. He does come back to us as real X, but we find out he's a cyber elf. And cyber elves are kind of harder to describe in the context of this game. Like they're programs that Reploids can use to enhance themselves. And they're a whole thing that starts this whole war, and by God, it's confusing. But the important thing is that X is one of these cyber elves and he watches over Zero, but Zero is still gone for a long, long time. In comes Elpigio, who should be called Elpis, but they didn't translate it properly.
I love that guy.
Oh, he's so great. When the opening of Zero 2, when Zero finally comes back and Elpigio is like, "I want to shake your hand." And Zero's just,
And Zero's just like, "No,
no, no, I'm good." But Zero Two, as I said, it was a little bit more forgiving. I think Subtanks came back, if not then in Zero Three. They learned a lot from Zero One's mistakes in the second game, and to the point that I think that Zero Two is a great example of Capcom again one upping itself from a first game to a second game. You get with Mega Man 2, you get it with Mega Man Legends 2. Mega Man X2, I still think the first one's a lot better, but Mega Man Zero 2 also kind of helped establish the story for Mega Man Zero. And well, let's try to get into it here. First of all, a lot of people don't know that Mega Man has a timeline. You guys knew that, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, it makes perfect sense and has no holes in it.
No holes whatsoever, tighter than the Hoover Dam. Go and weep, Zelda timeline. We have a winner here. So as I said, it takes place after Mega Man X. That's easy enough to suss out. But before, like kind of in between the events of Mega Man X and Mega Man Zero, a lot of people don't know what happened besides here's Neo Arcadia and they suck. There was a whole war called the Elf Wars. And what that was is, I'm going to have to really sum this up quickly, but because long story short, it deserved its own damn game. It tells you how the Maverick Wars became the Elf Wars, which then became the end of the world and the use of cyber elf technology. Basically, the Sigma virus, which causes all that havoc in Mega Man X, is sealed within the quote unquote mother elf. And that significantly reduces Maverick attacks. But here comes Dr. Wheel, a human scientist who is named Dr. Vile in Japan. So they kind of painted themselves into a corner there, given like Mega Man X has Vile. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I never knew if he was meant to be Dr. Vile as in Wily or Dr. Vile as in Vile. I never really got that.
Yeah, people have speculated on Dr. Wheel being Dr. Wily because Dr. Wily does appear in the X series as like, you know, Cyber Ghost, as well as like in actual bodies. And he's a major part of X5, which was incredibly cool. So yeah. He does haunt the series. Dr. Wily has haunted the series from the start, and by God, he's a boatman in Mega Man Legends. Let's drown that bastard right now before he can start shit again. He really looks like so resigned in Mega Man Legends. Like, I don't want any trouble now. I'm just a boat salesman. I hate the sea and everything in it. We actually had an incident in the Mega Man BB, Mega Man Outpost, Mega Man, one of those sites, one of the really, really old sites where someone, the proprietor of the site, was writing about Dr. Wheel, you know, just blah, blah. He's just character of blah, blah. He does that. Apparently there's a naturalist, a doctor named Dr. Wheel. And he wrote to the site saying, stop calling me an evil scientist. And we were mightily confused for a second until we realized what had happened. And then we just lost our shit.
God, that's hilarious.
It was great.
Then he received a letter later from Mega Man saying, excuse me, while I have achieved many great things, I have never been intergalactic. Sorry, that's just the most rubbish joke ever.
Oh, that would have been great writing him back as like Dr. Light. I am the father of robots. How dare you? But interesting thing again about Mega Man Zero is basically our big bad is a human, like in the first game, really, first series rather. But it's Dr. Wheel basically wanted power to make a new world order. Blah blah blah. He corrupted the Mother Elf to turn Reploid Maverick on a massive scale. He was granted permission to restore order with the blessing of the government, and he used Omega. Again, that's the copy of Zero's body, bring everyone under subjugation, and X and Zero had to unite to explode him because it was a lot. And unfortunately, most of the Elf Wars and all of this supplemental stuff is told through radio dramas, which are all in Japanese. And that goes for a lot of the story for Mega Man Zero, sadly. Like, did you guys ever get desperate enough to kind of listen to them and try to suss out what they were doing there?
Yes. There's a lot of screaming.
I understand.
No, I had the soundtracks, but I didn't know Japanese, so I would just go, of course, yes.
Yes, quite. No, they're actually, actually really interesting. If you look at the Mega Man knowledge base or the Mega Man wiki or whatever it is now, they do have translations of them. And at first they were kind of rough. I think it was basically machine translations, but I think people have gone back and smoothed it over and made it much more readable. And what's really fascinating is that something I am a little bit regretful that they didn't include in the Mega Man Zero series, the collection that just came out, I would have liked to see some of these supplemental radio dramas and stuff kind of, you know, translated. It has a lot of great art that is, we have some low resolution images of some of it, but not all of it. And I would have loved to see that in the collection. I would have loved to see like the translations of the story, because when you get to the last story or one of the last ones, it tells you all about how effectively after Mega Man 04, there is actually peace between Reploids and humans. And it's a lasting peace as far as we know, to the point that like both species kind of become one in Mega Man ZX. And I'm sure we'll get into that in a moment, but it's a shame that there is an actual ending, a peaceful ending to all of this war, and Mega Man X never really gets to see it. Zero, I don't know what happened after four. Nobody really knows. So yeah, I think that would have been a good conclusion. What about you guys?
I like to think of 04 as being the conclusion. I mean, it is, I guess, but I mean, I'm not crazy about the biometal stuff in general in ZX, because it always feels like they're digging him up after his death. I mean, there was a lot of talk back when 04 dropped that he wasn't dead. He was like in the shadow in the distance in the final picture. And he's not in the shadow. Dude's dead. He's a corpse. And the ending of 04 is just so perfect on every level. That, I mean, when you mentioned about Dr. Real being human, the fact that he pulls that out as his like almost trump card at zero, like, you can't kill me because I'm a human. I'm one of the humans. And Zero is just like, I don't give a shit. And it's the best thing ever in the whole series. Just that moment of just, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect like mic drop. And then the mic drop ends with him killing him to death. So yeah, it's flawless. But anything after that, yeah, it almost cheapens the kind of I don't know how to call it, the tragedy of it with Teal, like with that lovely song that they took out of the English version, because the
skeleton. They did, those bastards.
Just like, I think that's the last image you get, is her looking up at the stars of just like, after just like ugly crying for like 4 minutes of credits.
She does. She cries with the whole credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is just to kind of inform, no doubt, baffled readers. We're talking about Shell, the heroine, I suppose, of the series. She is the human who wakes up Zero and basically begs for his help immediately, so Zero doesn't even have time to like get the sleep out of his eyes. And she's like, oh god, we're being pursued by Mavericks, help us. And so he does. And there's very quickly a relationship kind of like established between them that's well, it's not exactly mutual, I think, but she definitely has the hots for him, as a lot of humans have the hots for the robots in these games. And I totally understand why. That's a very realistic part of this game, now thinking about the way that the internet culture is these days. Everyone wants to boff robots, and I'm pretty sure Shell grew pretty close to Zero.
Yeah. We aspired to be her.
We all aspired to be her. Shell is also interesting because she is, what, 14? And she apparently created Copy X?
Oh, something like that. Like she was in a test tube, like a test tube baby to be really smart or something, and then she built him.
Yeah, because as I recall, Entercreates made her to be 14, and then they realized, oh, she would have been like 6 years old when she made Copy X then. And so instead of aging her up a bit, they just said, oh, okay, you know what? She was genetically engineered to be super smart. Yes, she created Mega Man X when she was six.
I mean, it turned out to be evil, so it couldn't have done that good of a job, I guess.
Yeah, it all went kind of badly because I'm trying to remember why she created Copy X. I think because X disappeared shortly after the founding of Neo Arcadia, and he was, of course, a symbol of hope. And so she made Copy X to kind of replace him and hope nobody would notice, like when a parent replaces a dead pet with another one.
Here's your problem. Someone set this thing to evil.
Evil. So that's when things went badly, because as I understand it, Neo Arcadia was relatively peaceful for humans and Reploids alike until Copy X said, hey, you know what? Y'all jerks are the problem, like pointing at the Reploids. Like, you're the ones who go Maverick, and you have gone Maverick for many, many years. So therefore, we are keeping a really close eye on you, and we'll probably kill you if you give us half an excuse to do so. And that's when things started to really suck for Reploids in Neo Arcadia. A lot of them fled. That's why a lot of them fled with Shell. She was kind of established a base on the outskirts and helps them however she can. And it's all kind of useless until Zero comes and turns the tide of the war. And yeah, I understand why she fell in love with him. I mean, who wouldn't? He's cut such a dashing figure, even with his two-word dialogue, two-word sentences.
All that silky hair, too.
All that silky hair. What is it with Zero on that hair to this day? Here's a little bit of trivia for you. Many, many years ago, like back when I was on the Mega Man, like not even on the message boards, this was before it, I had a good friend who wrote into Capcom USA, of course, asking, why does Zero have hair like that? Is he a girl? And they responded, no, he just doesn't cut his hair because it's a symbol of strength. He's based on the Vikings. And that's complete bullshit. But it's a really it's a really cool reason.
I like that.
I think the real reason is, you know, if anybody's saying that it looks cool, buy my NFTs.
Oh, no, I'm sad now.
I love how like everyone forgot about Mighty No. 9. They're like, NFTs? This guy's gone too far.
I had to review Mighty No. 9. That was the bridge too far for me.
I genuinely quite like Mighty No. 9, but we'll save that for Bad Games We Love Volume 2.
Oh, God, I want to be part of that. I got to hear this.
That's got some off-screen deaths, you know.
Not all the backers did. Never mind, that's not funny. Feel free to cut that. That wasn't funny.
I think it's kind of funny.
It was kind of funny. I still cut myself off because I felt bad.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Zero Three. Like, why is it your favorite out of all? I'm like, I'll go into my favorite in a second, but you tell me yours first.
Oh gosh, for me, it's definitely the music, and I don't know, everything just at that point, Capcom kind of streamlined the gameplay, the systems, and it just feels very solid. And I don't know, from a story standpoint, it's just, come on, like, it's the best. It's perfect.
And that was Zero Three, right?
Zero Three, yeah.
Yeah, I give it to Zero Three, although this is kind of one of those things where it's my old opinion, and now with reflection, I still wonder, like, is it my favorite now? I think it is. As Brian said, it's the first one where they really overhauled the set systems, because two,
right,
while it was a big overhaul, they still kept in the whole leveling up thing, which was a pointless waste of effort, energy. This game just removes it. Like, nah, forget it. You can charge from the beginning. We'll just rebalance the game to fit around.
Yeah.
It has the coolest bosses, Mavericks, like Cubit Foxstar, which is the sort of Ninetales
yes,
boss, has probably the coolest attacks I've ever seen in any game ever, I would argue. Just so much fun to avoid, to learn and avoid. There's one which is, I don't remember the exact name, but it's like a Cerberus. It's like a three-headed dog.
Yeah, boss, that was an awesome design.
Which almost like has these, the sort of two other dogs that almost like are his arms that kind of almost unscrew from the arms and then come at you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the shoulder pads.
Ridiculous. Yes, the shoulder pads. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's ridiculously cool. He looks a little bit like Frostman from Mega Man, which is weird. But
His name is Tretista Calvarian.
Jesus,
yeah, I'm
Christ.
Not surprised I could. It sounds like, I don't know what it sounds like. There's, who else is there? There's
the bunny. I love the rabbit.
I remember the bunny. The bunny is cool. Especially because you spend the level chasing after them as well, which is fun.
That's right. He just kind of hops away from. He's like, chill.
Follow the white rabbit.
Oh yeah, I never realized that. That's a pretty cool reference.
But it's just a great set of bosses and interesting bosses, like the I think Blazing Flizzard for some reason.
That's Blizzard, right.
Whose tail you can cut off, which is just a cute little thing. It's like cutting the trunk off Flame Mammoth in Mega Man X. It just turns off one of their attacks, I think. The whole thing just feels, I think it's the shortest one. You can blitz through it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's rubbish, because it has way more bosses than the others. It must not be the shortest one. I don't know why I think it is. It's just so breezy and kind of almost chill to play, because it's not quite so insanely difficult. Maybe it feels shorter. Because there's so much variety in there, because you refight several 01 Mavericks in it. Hana Machine and a couple of others. So there's a lot going on in that game. Ah, what a cool game.
I think go on.
Sorry, no, I was going to think another reason why it's great is it has the whole secret disc system, which is just a really fun thing to have in a game. It's almost like having trophies in Smash Brothers. Just like, look at all the cool things you can look at.
And you get like little bits of information and lore from them, as I recall.
Yeah, really, really cool system. Just a top tier game. The only things about it that I don't like are, it's probably one of the more annoying ones to get high rank on, because a couple of the stages have quite a fiddly mechanics based around their missions. Like the rabbit, Children in a Rabbit's stage is really difficult to hit the switches before they get destroyed. And the boss who's like an eel whose name I forget, you have to memorize the color of some door, these 9 doors that are arranged in certain patterns, and go through the right doors, otherwise you get punished. And that's not really fun to replay. But other than that, it's pretty much top to bottom great, I think. I also don't like the fact they lock some of the minigames behind the most absurd possible requirements, like getting 100 points on every single stage. No one's doing that unless they're out of their minds. And by the time you've done that, you've got this rubbish minigame where you chop logs. It's not worth the hassle. For that, if you prove you've done that, you should take a picture of your GBA, send it to Capcom, and they just give you $1,000 or something. Like, it's not worth it.
They give you $1,000 or they'll make a new X game for you. That'd be great. Was 03, I think I reviewed that for 1UP.com, RIP, way back in the day. Was that the one with Hellbat?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the one. I remember his music was so awesome. Yeah, that was a really great soundtrack for all of the games that had great sound, considering the GBA chip was it really worked with the chip and didn't try to do that horrible thing where they would take SNES scores and shove them into the chip and re-release it as a GBA port. That was pretty sad, but no.
They had really great bespoke soundtracks. I'd argue that the 04 soundtrack may be overused to this certain guitar sound that didn't work for me, but it had a weird kind of do-do-do-do kind of sound that I wasn't crazy about. But yeah, but otherwise, no, it was great. They're fantastic soundtracks. And I think they've been fully like remastered, re-recorded and everything. So.
Oh, yeah.
Very enjoyable to this day.
I think that the intro bit for Mega Man 02, when he does that whole thing where he throws off his cloak and says let's go,
it's
the
awesome
intro, that the music there is iconic. Like that is basically his theme, like the theme of the series almost. And yeah, that's a great moment. I actually went left the first time I did that and just kind of kept killing the endless stream of robots that come for you until Zero says, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah, I love that. It's like a little Easter egg that you immediately found. It's just like, nope. That's the sort of thing that, I was trained to do that by Donkey Kong Country. Always go left.
Always, exactly. Donkey Kong Country, thank you very much. Always go left, get that 1UP balloon and see that. That letter from K. Rool saying, arr, arr, I kidnapped your banana horde or whatever the stupid thing I did. Arr, arr. I think actually my favorite was 04. And you're absolutely right. I think that 03 plays better. But I think 03 and 4 link up to really give you information about what the hell is going on in this world. And that's also important. 03, as I recall, had a sunken library. And I'm like, wow, this is some Echo the Dolphin shit right here. Because that's, I don't know if they were inspired by it, but man, it sure did remind me of it. And that's when you learn about the Elf Wars and the rest of it. And one thing about Zero's story, I have to say, the first game's not translated very well. It's better in subsequent games, but it's still a little rough because they had to fit a lot of text in those little stupid boxes and they didn't really use a good, you know, a good font for it. But it's, how small can you make it to? It's a, they were kind of trapped between the devil and the deep blue sea. But 04, I think, did a really good job with his localization. That's when I mentioned earlier about how Neo Arcadia sucks for Reploids. By the time you get to 04, it really sucks for everybody because Dr. Wheel he came back. He's been like infiltrating government the whole time. Ha ha ha, evil. And he, having always wanted that new world order, he finally starts going about and setting that into motion. So the game starts with humans fleeing from Neo Arcadia in a caravan. And they've heard that, and this is a really good callback to a Mega Man X game, in X5, when the Eurasia colony fell, it kind of, I guess its nature systems or whatever, kind of spilled out and started kind of rebuilding the nature in that area. So the humans have an oasis that they are going to run to in the wasteland. And they're being pursued because, of course, Dr. Wheel's like, no, everybody has to be under my rule. And that's when you meet up with Zero, and Zero like helps the caravan. And you don't, for a series, and I'm talking about the whole series, the whole Mega Man series, for a series that's supposed to be about the conflict between robots and humans, you never see humans in the series until, barring, Dr. Kane, Dr. Light, who had Dr. Wily, until finally you get a whole settlement of humans in Mega Man 04. And they're like, you helped us, but we still hate you. We hate all Reploids. And that was a really, really cool twist. I love that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Like, we really don't see any humans, like, throughout X whatsoever. But yeah, everybody's kind of being a dick.
Everyone's a huge dick when you arrive, and they get better because you help them more and more. And you do find some friendly ones. Like, I'll get into this in a second, but there is a way to link up the entire Mega Man timeline through one character, practically. And in 04, when you talk to some of the humans in the game, like, they will talk about their relation to the particular character and how their grandparents interacted with him or whatever. That character is Andrew, who goes back to the first Mega Man Zero game.
Oh,
and
I'd forgotten about that. And it's like I'm learning it for the first time again. And it's really cool. Sorry, I couldn't not react to that.
No, because he is a really cool character. I wrote a whole thing on US Gamer. If you want to go back and read that sometime, he's the guy you go to if you want to put the timeline together. Not perfectly, but the way it works is that in the first game, he tells you he fell in love with a human. They lived together for a while, and she got older, and he didn't get older because he's a Reploid. But he basically remodeled his body to become older, so she could, she would stop resenting him. And she died, but he stayed old. Unless you, I think in Mega Man 03, you can make him young again, like if you use the E card. But
that sort of puts a bit of a like a stop to the whole story, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. But try to remember in 02, like, he tells you about like how he met this woman, and this is obviously before everything went to hell for Neo Arcadia. And then he kind of goes on to describe how he taught children, like he taught human children, and you meet some of the descendants of those students in 04. And he's just a really fascinating character in that he links everything up. And he's even mentioned in the ZX series, because he mentions in Mega Man 03 that he was a baker. And in Mega Man ZX, you find someone whose great-great-great-great-great-grandfather worked with a Reploid who knew how to bake bread really well. And apparently, for some reason, Andrew knew how to bake bread really well. So he just like a really neat callback to a really neat link to the whole timeline. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that he was like named after the character from Bicentennial Man, which I've never seen. R.I.P. Robin Williams, but I've never seen it. Did you guys see it?
No, I remember seeing the box like in Blockbuster all the time. Like, that's kind of cool. But I think you're right. A viral tweet going around from Japan that drew that comparison.
Yeah, because I think the movie, like I said, I never saw it, was about a robot who falls in love with a human and he changes his body so that he can be with her. I think he became human instead of vice versa. But either way, I think in Gunvolt, he's got a reference where one of the characters says she's watching a movie or reading a story about, a robot who fell in love with a human and they couldn't be together or something like that. And so it's just like, damn, Anticreates loves this guy. And I kind of love them because they love this guy. He wasn't in 04, though. Like I said, you met some of his descendants, but you did have the heroine for that story who was Nej. And she was in love with one of the Reploids in charge of Wheel's nonsense in 04. And he, since they're on opposite sides, like, he kidnaps her to try to get her to see reason. She tries to get him to see reason. And eventually this character named Kraft, which is a funny name.
Yeah, it's a funny name.
Just nukes all of Neo Arcadia and kills millions. And he thinks he's killing Wheel in the process, but he's just like, I'm not going to be bossed around by anyone anymore. And just that's the end of that. And there were some survivors and they all went over to the Area Zero, as it was called, the Oasis. But damn, that's kind of hardcore. And it's like your boyfriend gets so infatuated with you that he just nukes the entirety of human and robot civilization. Good job. I like that game a lot.
It's a really cool game. I think the only thing I would say, and it's to its detriment, and maybe I'm being unreasonable, I think that the character designs were actually done by someone else this time around for this one game. And you can kind of tell because they're all really dumb. Like there's a chicken in there. And...
No. I love them. They're all based on mythological characters. That's it.
Yeah. I assume that's like a cockatrice or something.
That's a cockatrice. There's a minotaur. Yeah.
No, I'm being unfair. They are cool. They just seem at least a bit more dumb than the other. They're not quite as cool looking to me. Or their attacks weren't quite so fun to avoid. Plus, I'm salty because there's one called Fenry Lunar Edge who has this one attack that I still can't dodge.
Playing
this game for like 20 years.
Is that the butterfly one?
The butterfly one is a fairy based as Titania, a fairy queen. So that's another reference to, Shakespeare in this instance. But she's a fairy queen.
Lunage is like a wolf, ice wolf guy. He has this, they have this one attack where they jump all over the screen, and every time they do, they launch projectiles in different directions. And it's really hard to dodge, especially when you're playing on the hard mode with the difficult weather so that the floor is covered in ice.
I think that was also the game with, it had a Pegasus, but yeah. It was like, help, I have no arms. Like it had spiky, that was kind of dumb, I have to admit. It had like spiky appendages instead of like hoofs or something normal.
Yeah, and shot lightning everywhere, and then also there was wind in the arena that could blow you straight off the platforms if you're playing on. I should probably explain the hard mode actually. The way the game distinguished the missions, instead of having missions again, it just had like you can either play easy mode in which the weather is pleasant,
right,
or you can play hard mode in which the weather is like the kind of weather that makes it harder. But they were actually more interesting than that because it was more like. Soul Titanian stage, if you had the hot weather, their gimmick was it was so hot that you'd have like a little gauge filling at the top of the screen, and when it got to 100%, you start taking damage.
Right.
Unless you go into the shade. And basically on hard mode, that gauge would fill up like much quicker.
Yeesh.
Or there was less shade, something like that. But the other ones were along the lines of like, this area's got platforms that are semi-invisible, but when the weather's snowing, you can see them because there's snow on them. I might be conflating that with Mega Man 7. That's just an example that might be rubbish.
That happened, yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting way of just saying, like, okay, forget it. Forget all this complicated nonsense. Just pick normal or hard. They also made it so that you could use elves to a much more significant degree than the previous games, which I was very grateful for. Because it made it feel like it was actually worth getting those energy crystals for once.
Right.
In the previous games, you're constantly getting them. In 3, you could have your satellite elves, but that's it, I think. Anything else and you get punished. 2 and 1, it's just like, don't use elves or bad rank. No elf.
I think 3, was it 3 that had cyberspace where you could use elves without penalty?
Yeah, I thought that you got penalty for going in cyberspace, apart from that one time when you have to go to fight the secret boss.
I might be totally wrong about that. But it was kind of weird. It's always weird when someone says cyberspace and makes it a story point because it sounds so 1995. And dudes, by this point, we're in the 2000s. Yeah. Please stop it.
I mean, we were doing Battle Network and that was all cyberspace stuff.
That was kind of cool, though.
Yeah, that's true. I thought it was going to be a reference to Battle Network, but no, it wasn't. I think the only interaction that they had was one of the games could link up with it. But that might not even be true, to be honest. Yep. I can't even.
It was Battle Network 4.
As if the Zero series couldn't get even harder, they now make you play Battle Network 4.
I'll jack into your squirrel if that's what it takes. Maybe that should have been the intro for the episode. Going off topic for half a second, Mega Man Battle Network is so weird because I remember playing it and being like, a stove hooked up to the internet? That's so stupid. Who ever thought of that? And like in this day and age, some teenager's like, hi, I hacked my Twitter account from my refrigerator because my mom took away my phone. So that just kind of happened, I guess, of all the weird, stupid, pointless things. There you go.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but everything in the Mega Man series is eventually going to come true. So,
I mean, it is eerie how the Battle Network series, like, who's going to carry around a device like that? That you look like a dork. Stop it. And it's, oh, look at smartphones. What do you know? 04, we covered the bosses. We covered the weather system, which was that was something else. We covered the story. And that basically, if you want to say there's an end to the Zero series, it's 04 because Zero goes to fight Dr. Wheel up in space on Ragnarok, the weapon that basically nuked everything. And as you said, Stuart, it's great because Wheel's like, haha, this is my trump card. I'm a human. You're going to hurt me. And Zero's like, yeah, yeah. So he's like, what are you going to do? Do the laws of robotics apply in outer space? Like, it's just, I don't think they do, especially not against a genocidal maniac.
Can I also shout out, and this is very spoily, the final battle with Vile or Wheel, whatever his name is, at the end is, first of all, it's ridiculously cool, the first phase, when he's summoning the 03 bosses to have a go at you.
Or, yes.
And shooting asteroids from space at you. It's really cool boss design. But second, the scene where he gets, I don't even know what happens to him. He gets hooked into something and turns into a giant final form version of himself. On the Japanese version, because they still have the blood, when he's got all these wires going into him, every single one of them is shooting blood out of it. It's the most gruesome thing I've ever seen in a Mega Man game, especially because they start going at such rapid speed that it's almost just like, it's crazy. And it's still cool, even though I am a fully grown man, I should know better.
It's actually kind of creepy when you think about it, because yeah, we saw blood in 01, but that was when he cut up a robot. This is a human just pumping its blood and spraying it into outer space. That's insane.
Old man, you know.
Old man spraying his blood. And he's immortal. As I understand it, Wheel was made immortal as punishment for his many, many sins. And not only that, but they replaced his brain, or they installed chips into his brain to make it impossible for him to forget what he had done. So he couldn't even have the option of like peacing out and being like, I'm going to just forget this.
It might be worth mentioning the ridiculous Zero Fist thing from Zero Arm from this game as well, where you can just...
I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, you can just grab your enemies and rip their weapons off them, basically, when they're defeated. And then you can start using their weapons, although they're more or less almost entirely useless, except for very specific situations. So
I recall that much.
Mostly just turned it off and used the shield again.
Yeah.
If indeed you still had the shield on this one. That thing was useful. Nobody ever talks about the shield. It was really useful in these games. You can reflect bullets, for goodness sake.
I do have to say that I found a lot of the gimmicks in the Zero series, and each game had a gimmick, was not very useful. It's actually very cool in the first game how you start off like we're pretty weak. You just have your gun, and that's when you fight the golem that kidnaps Shell, and you get the saber, and stuff really kind of heats up after that. I just never changed from the saber, but 03 had like, no, 02 had the swinging chain, I think it was. That was, I was like, oh, cool, this is going to be like Castlevania 4, where you can swing like a maniac, but no, it's extremely limited. Never used that. I don't think I used the shield much. I was always just a very much a charge up your weapon with the lightning element and do your best kind of player.
The other weapons, like the triple rod was the one from 3, they all to me felt like very specific situational. There's a cyber elf you need to get by using this thing here, like where you can only get it by doing a triple rod jump, then a double jump or something like that. But for fighting the actual bosses, I think I have seen videos of people doing ridiculous combos with them where they just take enormous amounts of health off the bosses without even seeming to blink. But I couldn't be bothered figuring it out because the charged saber was good enough for me, basically.
Yeah.
I think, was it the triple rod that could also bounce like pogo, pogo, pogo?
Yeah,
pogo,
that's the one. It's the one from 3. Yeah. It can bounce you up in the sky. And then if you have also double jump, you can get some of the hidden discs with it, I think. Some of the really well hidden ones.
Right.
But, that might be, that might just be misremembering because I haven't played that game for a long time. Not to get 100% anyway.
Yeah, for sure. 04. Yeah. So it ends with, as you said, Shell ugly crying for 4 minutes during the credits, which I shouldn't be laughing because it's actually a very sad ending.
It's really sad. It's really moving. It's really moving. That whole game is really hard for me to play because I just start getting upset by it. Everything that happens, you just know where it's going and you know that there's going to be all that loss of life. And it's just genuinely really, really quite depressing. But also, I guess, kind of hopeful. It's just like, if you think of Zero as being kind of a death seeker, it makes more sense, I suppose.
Yeah, he's always been kind of like that.
But it's very kind of full circle, because at the beginning of 01, when he's revived, he doesn't say anything. She just, Shell, I keep calling her Seal because that's what I used to call her.
And I think everyone did.
Yeah. So when all she says is "help me, please," and then it just says, "Oh, your mission started." Now you've got your mission. It's very narratively almost kind of full circle to have him at the end just kind of say, "Actually, I don't care about any of what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna smash you to pieces." And then, it's perfect. It's a perfect series. I'm just gonna say it now. Even with the things that aren't perfect, it's still perfect.
I understand that sentiment completely because, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Zero's mission, like whereas X has always been about the good of humanity, the good of everyone, probably to his detriment. Zero's always been like, I have my friends, I'm going to protect them, and the rest of you can all F off. So he's kind of, I guess, a libertarian, but a cool one with a sword.
I love that.
But I mean, it makes sense in the context of his world because it is what gives him the strength to say, I am who I am, and I'm not really bound by any rules, especially not your lame ass rules, old man. And that's the end of that. You do see in one of the CD dramas, as I said, there is a follow-up that kind of talks about how everyone found a lasting peace. And there's actually this is interesting to me. There's apparently a baby boom outside of New Arcadia. And I'm thinking to myself, are people not reproducing in New Arcadia? Was Dr. Wheel just watching him and everyone just like, no, we're not shagging right now. And then when he was gone, whoop, time to breed. So maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
When was the baby boom in the
after 04, their surviving humans move out to the Area Zero. And apparently the Pantheon hunters, the ones who actually spend most of the game chasing you, they become carers for children. So that was kind of a funny.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, see, that's sweet. There's a nice ending for the Pantheons as well.
Well, it's a good redemption arc.
It is. If you go to, again, the Mega Man Wiki and look up, I think it's called like Eden Dome, it's Sin Rebirth. It's structured like a newspaper article talking about the future. Like it's talking about where things are now in context to the past. Like it's an interviewer who talks to Nej, and Nej doesn't really give him anything except a picture of her and Kraft together, which is really sweet. And just talks about the children who are born now don't know what New Arcadia was. And whereas the old timers think of New Arcadia as a paradise, the children are like, why? This is paradise where we're living right now. So it's just definitely a good wrap up. I encourage you to go ahead and seek that out. And yeah, that is kind of like the Zero series in a nutshell. I suppose to wrap up, I'll ask one final question. How do you feel about ZX as a follow-up?
I feel like it's pointless. It doesn't really add or continue on much of anything, anyone's growth, not to mention, no one's really in it. Shell is presumed missing or dead, but beyond like some of the boss designs, some of the robot designs, it's just, it kind of feels like a step down in almost every, thematically, plot, everything. It's a step down. And I often wonder what was the point of the entire, of ZX other than having a traditional Mega Man game on the DS?
I liked ZX Advent better.
It was better.
ZX, it felt to me like there are so many things I didn't like about it. For the game itself, I think, as I actually mentioned this on a recent episode, I think it has the worst map ever in any game I've ever seen.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
In terms of actually helping you find where you're going.
Yeah.
You got to draw your own map or you're just going to be lost the whole time, basically. And also not telling you where you need to be going as well. It's like you need to go to area F4. It's like,
what the hell is an F4?
What does that mean? But what it struck me as was a little bit like Capcom going, these Battle Network PETs are selling kind of well. Maybe there's another little thing we can make it's like these little, the biometals, they're almost like little toys that can transform you.
Right.
And that felt a little bit kind of like if they had done better, that they might have been going for that kind of market. I don't know. Also, on a lore level, it kind of sucks that they canonically bring Zero back from the dead to be carried around by some guys to transform into like a copy of their armor, more or less. I appreciated the gameplay when it was actually just letting you kind of get on with it and just play some levels. That was fun. It's because it was still kind of the same basic thing. But the fact that they had felt they had to put kind of a Metroidvania spin that really didn't work for me,
right,
that kind of bummed me out. As I mentioned, I like Advent better. I thought it was a much more enjoyable game. A lot of people criticize it for its success, and it has lots of transformations that are almost completely useless, but I really like that. I love stuff like that, just silly stuff. It's fun. But overall, yeah, I just almost just kind of wish they hadn't made them, because they almost cheapen the Zero series by association. I'm just glad they didn't call them 0, 5, and 6, I guess, so I can completely
that's true.
Plus, also, yeah, they ended it on a damn cliffhanger that's never getting resolved again. And the Zero series ended. There's no need to have done that.
That's right, yeah. I played through Advent as the human girl. I can't remember her name. It wasn't Ale. It was, well, whatever.
Vent and Ale were, I think they were the first game. I can't remember.
Yeah. Ash, thank you.
Great Ash, yeah. That's it, yeah.
And that was strange because you have Master Albert, who, of course, is an allegory for Dr. Wily. And he's like, yeah, you're my like distant descendant. And it's like, oh, okay, that's weird. But I will give it credit for finally, or at least trying to link everything up to Legends, where there's a secret ending where Thomas, the one of the mages of the group, or sages, I forget what they're called, is like, this world needs to be erased. And that implies that Mega Man Legends, like, that's how everything kind of became, well, reset. The whole theme of Mega Man Legends is reset, 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 rebirth. So I guess that was a nice little sort of lead-in, a little bone, I suppose we got.
If you think of it that way, it makes it a lot more tolerable. If they were never intending to follow up, it was just meant to be a little...
Yeah.
A carrot on a stick for Legends fans.
Yeah.
Which...
Or one way or another, the timelines all lead to Mega Man on the Moon doing nothing and never being followed up on.
That's so depressing. Ultima Thule, Terminus, there it is, Mega Man.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I got a little creepy feeling on the back of my brain that Legends, something's going to happen with it. I feel like it's coming.
If they were bold enough to do another Mega Man game, I think they'd, but Inafune was, Legends was his baby. And if they touched that, that's real. That's definitely forbidden territory.
Yeah, but I mean, again, Nightmice number 9, NFTs, you know, nah. I think it's, he made NFTs, like, forget it, man. We can touch Legends now. He isn't, it's all gone.
His hands are sullied.
Yeah.
Enormously so. That's basically all the time we have for this episode of Retronauts. Thank you guys so very, very much for coming on. It was definitely a pleasure recalling all of this pain.
Fond memories of Game Shark days and Mega Man BB.
Oh, good times, good times. Okay, so let's promote some stuff. Brian, you're the guest, so you get to tell us you know, where you come from, where you're going. Sell it.
Yeah. If you want to learn about the latest Mega Man news and stuff you don't really care about, like Mega Man underwear and Mega Man G Fuel, head on over to Rockman Corner at www.rockman-corner.com.
God damn, Mega Man underwear. It's just the world we live in, eh?
I know.
Does it come in women's? I don't think I would. Not even I'm that sick. Stuart, how about you? Why don't you tell us? Well, I kind of know where you come from, but tell the folks at home.
Yeah, I guess the main thing I do is Retronauts. You can also see my games writing in things like Retro Game, Sega Powered Magazine, and I can't announce that. I nearly announced that I'm not supposed to announce.
Yes.
I keep doing that a lot lately. It feels like I'm doing it on purpose to seem more interesting than I am, but no, I genuinely am not. yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at Stupacabra, and you can see all my terrible opinions that will immediately make you unfollow me.
You had some pretty, I have to say, that Balan Wonderland take was a little bit of a no.
People were so mad about that. It was almost scary. I mean, I say almost because I'm just like a white dude. I was never going to get it as bad as, you know, anyone who didn't fall within that sort of category.
Yeah.
But 2 solid days of just pure solid days. Awful. People sure.
That's a lot of energy to waste about getting mad and Balan Wonderworld.
With hindsight, I don't regret saying I like Balan, because I still do, but I do regret saying I liked it better than Bowser's Fury.
That's what you said that got everyone pissed. Okay, that I remember now.
Because that while it was true on my end, I shouldn't have said it. It's like get Marge thing. It's true, but you shouldn't say it.
It's true, we shouldn't say it.
Yeah.
But if you think this episode is cool, we have like a lot more content like it. Just visit Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/Retronauts for access to media that's less depressing than a never-ending robot war that ends on the moon and will never get off the moon, probably. Support us at the $3 level to receive early access to weekly episodes. Support us at the $5 level to get episodes a week early, as well as 2 exclusive episodes a month. Support us at the magic number 64 for the opportunity to set a topic for a Retronauts episode once every 6 months. As of this recording, there's only one spot left for that tier, so eat it up. As for me, I am Nadia Oxford. I am the co-host of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast. We talk about RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. Please support us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. You can also follow me on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. And here's a little cool bonus. My husband and I both wrote the Mega Man Robot Masters Field Guide and the Mega Man X Maverick Hunters Field Guide, which both are on Amazon, and you should buy them because I think they're really cool. Until next time, try to find a way to get off the damn moon.